Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money on a gorgeous spring day in Park City, expecting a high of 65 under mostly sunny skies today. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, and it's Monday morning, so it's time for Mountain Money. And we have a packed show today of interesting guests, and I really mean that.
We say that every week.
We may say it
but
all
this
the time.
Week, trust us, we mean it.
We have to lead off, Mike Quincy is joining us by phone from New York, and he is one of the car editors of Consumer Reports. And Doug, this is one of my favorite segments of the
whole
year.
Yeah, we enjoy this show. Cars.
This is
we're talk cars.
This is the episode where we talk about the best and worst cars in on the American market, and Consumer Reports buys and tests every one of them and puts them through the paces. And we will be back with Mike Quincy to tell us all about them.
Doesn't that sound like a great job to do in retirement, Larry? Oh. I'm working for Consumer Reports, test driving a Porsche 911.
Yeah. Oh, and after that, I'd like the Tesla delivery.
That's right. That's right. And so that's going to be a tough act to follow, but we've got a stellar lineup this morning. We've got Calum Clark, and we also have Mike Jaquit, both with USSA, and they're going to talk to us about the U.S. Grand Prix, which is becoming larger than the X Games and larger than the Do Tour. It's become quite the success. 2 weeks ago, the finale event was held here in Park City, and we're going to find out more about that. And then our final guest is going to be Merrill Vander Merwe, started up a new restaurant, Joffel's. And if you've ever gone camping and cooked your dinner over the campfire using those irons, there's a business in that. And they're starting a restaurant, and their flagship store is right here in Park City, and we're going to hear more. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a minute. Please stay tuned.
That changes nightly, the seafood buffet offers items such as sushi, shellfish, prime rib, and duck, plus house-baked desserts. Located in the Snow Park Lodge and open Thursday to Sunday, 6:15 to 9 p.m. Reservations number 645-6632 or deervalley.com.
Hey everybody, I'm Summer Schlope. You know, I run a lot of races, but one of my absolute favorites is Running with Ed. Registration is open for Park City's favorite relay race. It's a celebration of education. So grab your friends, grab your family. Even the little ones can run a leg. Don't miss out on early registration specials. Teams of 5 to 10 people are available. No excuses. Join the race that's a party and raises money for our teachers and students. Go to runningwithed.com today. Running with Ed is a project of PCEF, a nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. We have Mike Quincy on the line. Mike, are you with us? Nope, he's not. Okay, we will endeavor to get Mike back on the line. And in the meantime, we will talk about the car issue. You know, we're interested every year in hearing what Consumer Reports has to say. And they have lots of conclusions, and we will get to them shortly.
Well, and as we're waiting for Mike, I mean, one of the fun things, we all like picking up and talking about the fun cars, but there's also some surprises in there. I think we have Mike, and we'll talk about some of these surprises. Mike, are you on the line?
Yes, good morning. How's everybody today?
Good morning.
Just fine. Hey, Mike, first of all, we have you on every year, maybe a couple times a year, to talk about cars, and just before we dive into what's hot and what's not, just tell us briefly, how do you go about evaluating as many cars as there are on the market these days?
Well, we're really a busy group of car enthusiasts out here in Connecticut. We have a 327-acre facility, and all we do is cars, tires, and child safety seats. We spent millions of dollars buying cars. We don't take any advertising, and we don't get any cars for free from the manufacturer, so we're really kind of telling the honest truth about what you can get for your dollar. And we put every car through its paces. We do fuel economy, handling, acceleration, braking tests, and we all come up with a overall number of how the car scores. And the April issue of Consumer Reports has just about everything you ever wanted to know about what's going on in the world of cars these days.
It does, and let's start with some of those. I was really surprised. One of them, the audience here has heard me talk about this in the past. I'm fairly frugal, so I want to talk about the fun stuff. But I also went to the best miles per gallon, section. And frankly, I was really surprised because you have several electric cars, as one would expect on that list. But some of the electric cars get better, quote-unquote, miles per gallon than that, than others. Tell us about why the BMW gets better mileage than the Tesla. I would think they'd be the same.
Well, the BMW i3, which is their electric car, is a lot smaller. It's a lot lighter. It's not quite as focused as performance car like the Tesla is. In Consumer Reports testing, we got 139 miles per gallon, what we call an E equivalent. It's not obviously fuel as in petrol. It's an equivalent calculation that we use to go from the electric usage in miles that we get per charge compared to miles per gallon that you get when you fill up your car with gasoline. So, I mean, the i3 is quite impressive, bringing in that 139 mile per gallon figure, and it compares to the Tesla with 84. But again, the Tesla is just an absolute rocket ship.
And in fact, Tesla continues to be about your favorite car in terms of best cars out there on the road, right? Last year you were blown away by them, and I presume your opinion hasn't changed in a year.
Exactly. In the April issue of Consumer Reports, we have an article called Our Top Picks, which is kind of like our all-star selection of what's going on in the car world. And our best overall model is the Tesla Model S, and it continues to wow us with its technology, with its easy-to-use infotainment touchscreen interior. It is wicked to drive. It's super, super fast. And we got about between 180 and 225 miles of driving range, depending on the temperatures outside. So it's a really easy to use day-to-day vehicle.
So, Mike, let me ask you. I'm going to stay on the frugal theme for one more question, and we'll transfer over to the fun theme. You also have a section, the least cost of ownership over a five-year period. I think our audience is going to be surprised. Tell our audience about the most affordable car over that period of time, but also, I think what people think is an inexpensive car and they're buying it to save money, I think they'll be surprised that it's actually one of the more expensive cars to own over a five-year period.
Well, a lot of times when people think about buying a car, they're just thinking about the initial cost when you go to buy it. And instead, the way that you want to think about it is the biggest cost that you're facing in the first 3 years of ownership is depreciation. And it's going beyond just maintenance and fuel costs and just scratching out that monthly payment. But in terms of the cars that are least expensive to own, the list is absolutely dominated by hybrids. When you think about the frugality not only of buying these cars, but their fuel economy savings, and you combine that with Consumer Reports reliability data, these cars are not finding their way into your mechanics' garages because they're getting fixed all the time. We really are big on the Toyota Prius C, the Honda Civic Hybrid, the Toyota Camry Hybrid, the Toyota Avalon Hybrid. You can see the theme here that we're going with. Hybrids tend to be cheap to own in not only the short run and the long run. And again, you combine that with great reliability.
And what accounts for that? Is it because an electric motor is pretty trouble-free?
Well, I think what it counts for is that Toyota especially has been so committed to hybrids and hybrid technology. The first hybrid, I believe, came out in 2000 in the United States. But even years before that, the Japanese market, they were working and refining and perfecting this technology. And it is a complicated piece of machinery. You've got your regular internal combustion gas engine, and you combine it with a whole bunch of rows of battery packs and an electric motor, and it all comes together swimmingly. In fact, the April issue of Consumer Reports, the Toyota Prius is among the top most reliable cars looking past even 10 years of data. So not only can you make this car cheap to own, you can make it extremely fuel efficient. Toyota is smart enough to also make it very, very reliable.
Indeed. And I guess the early question on electric cars, hybrid cars, was the reliability of batteries, and that hasn't proven to be that much of an issue.
And that's an excellent point, and I think people were a little nervous. I think when you've got this new technology, you're not sure how it's going to pan out. You're worried, are the batteries going to die on us, and how much is that going to cost to replace? And we have very little data, except I believe for the Honda Civic Hybrid, of batteries failing at all. That we were told in the beginning when we started studying these things that the automaker said the batteries are good for the life of the car, and of course we had no idea what that meant. And maybe they didn't either, but it really turned out to have some legs to it. I mean, the hybrid system in Toyota is reliable, not just in the Prius, but also in the Avalon and the Camry applications.
Now, we live up at 7,000 feet in the Wasatch Mountains, and in a normal year, which this isn't, we would have about 5 months of snow, maybe. And
yeah, it all came to Connecticut, let me tell you.
Well, you know,
I got more snow than we've gotten this season.
On the last NPR news, we heard 108 inches in Boston this winter, and I think that's more than we got here in ski country. But nonetheless, we worship the SUV class of car in this town. What have you found in terms of large, medium, and small SUVs to be the best picks?
Well, the April issue of Consumer Reports has an SUV for just about everybody's price range, and the people at Subaru are very pleased because three of their models wound up on our top picks list.
That's pretty much the unofficial official car of Park City, Subaru.
Particularly in green,
as it is in New England as well. That's kind of, if it snows, get a Subaru. But we really like the Subaru Forester. This returned about 26 miles per gallon in Consumer Reports testing, has awesome reliability, has a lot of room inside. It's extremely easy car to live with, and you've got the standard Subaru all-wheel drive. So definitely check out the Forester. For a little bit more money, I would look at the Toyota Highlander. This is Consumer Reports top pick for a mid-sized SUV. And they also have a hybrid version, gets about 25 miles per gallon overall, which is really impressive considering it's a three-row vehicle. It's very comfortable. It's easy to drive. The Highlander is really it's my wife's favorite family car. We have two small boys, and it fits perfectly with our lifestyle. So I would definitely look at the Forester and the Highlander. Those are two great picks for an SUV.
Okay, and then for the 1%ers in our audience, what's the big gorilla monster SUV that you like the best?
Well, the ones that are the best for the big size, I would say look to, again, keep looking to Toyota. I think the Toyota Highlander, the Toyota Land Cruiser is a terrific SUV. It's very luxurious in size. It's very expensive, but it's also very reliable. I mean, for the 1%ers, they're probably going to gravitate towards something like maybe a Land Rover or a top Lexus or something like that, or maybe a Mercedes-Benz. But for reliability and overall toughness and durability, my money would go right to the Toyota Land Cruiser.
And Mike, what about for folks that are committed to buying American? You've got a section in there talking about how Detroit has woken up and they're producing better cars than ever before. What are a couple of your favorite American-made cars?
Well, in the April issue of Consumer Reports, the folks at General Motors are absolutely dancing. They're happy dance because we have the Chevrolet Impala as our top pick for a large car, and for anyone who had ever driven or even rented an Impala over the last 20 years, this current Impala is nothing like that. It is large, it's roomy, it has excellent handling, it's a really strikingly good-looking car, about 22 miles per gallon overall in Consumer Reports testing for the V6 model. We think you should definitely look at the Impala. And for sports sedan, people were completely blown away. We brought out the April issue of Consumer Reports, because the Buick Regal, of all cars, has outscored all the other top, even European sports sedans. We love the Regal. Part of the reason is it's based on a European platform. But it didn't get all of that fun Europeanness taken out of it. It isn't some big floaty car that our grandparents owned. This is a strong performing model. It's got a four-cylinder engine, puts up about 259 horsepower, returning 24 miles per gallon overall. If you like driving, if you've always liked sports sedans in the past, I urge you to go to your Buick dealer and say, yeah, don't laugh at me. I want to look at the Regal.
Wow. And yeah, that is a surprise because it does remind you of Grandpa's car. Cadillac wannabe that wasn't quite there. But
you know, even the Cadillac's not the Cadillac anymore, right? Aren't those the guys that do the commercial, "This isn't your father's car"? Is that Cadillac?
That was years ago in the 80s. That was Oldsmobile.
That was Oldsmobile, which is no more.
Dead and buried. but think of the odds you guys would have gotten in the 1970s when you said, I think one day they're going to use Led Zeppelin's music to sell Cadillacs. But that actually happened. Wow, I've completely stopped this radio show at its tracks, haven't I?
There's a lot of Led Zeppelin played on this station, actually. You'd be surprised. You can't get Taylor Swift on this station, God help you, but you can get Led Zeppelin.
Hey, let's talk about one other area which surprised me, and that is safety ratings. There are two car companies that I can think of that really tout safety as one of the main reasons to buy them, and that's VW and Volvo, and yet they're not your top safety picks.
Well, it's really hard to zero in on just finding, because we're often asked, you know, what is the safest car, and really the safest cars are the ones that are kind of put in park and turned off, but there are a lot of models out there that will deliver the safety goods. And you're right, it's not just Volvo these days or Volkswagen. It really depends on the kind of class that you're looking at and how you measure safety. I mean, safety is measured with crash test results from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety as well as our government. And we also measure them in safety in terms of how does the car perform in emergency braking, emergency handling. How good is a car when it comes to avoiding a crash altogether? And again, some are better than others. For say a mid-sized car, the Mazda 6 is a car that did well in our testing. It's reliable. It has good crash tests and has a good bit of safety equipment available. And that's kind of really the talk about safety in 2015 is all of the passive and active safety features. There's lane departure warning systems. There's forward collision warning. There's rear cross traffic alert. All of these electronic sensors and eyes that you have all around your car that are looking out for things that you might not be paying attention to, and you get alerts from such as flashing lights, your seat or steering wheel can vibrate to remind you that you're not paying attention. So the car is doing a lot of thinking for you these days, and in most cases, that's for the better.
It's amazing, isn't it? You know, another trend is the self-driving cars, and I know obviously there's none to test out, but I'm curious, as somebody that spends a lot of time in cars, test drives them, is talking to the manufacturers, what do you think? How far away are we until we're going to see people on the highway reading a novel as their car drives itself to work, back and forth to work?
Yeah, well, you know, where I live, people do that now, but that's not self-driving cars. Now they're all looking at their phones. No, actually, I mean, the hardware and software exists right now to have self-driving cars. I think the issues holding it back, obviously, are the legal issues. You know, what happens the first time somebody gets hit, a pedestrian gets hit by a self-driving car? There are also issues about how the cars are going to be talking to the other cars. I mean, in a perfect world, all of the cars would have these kind of transponders or this, you know, kind of OnStar telematic systems, because the cars are going to talk to each other. So say two cars are entering a blind intersection. Those two cars are already saying, okay, I think I'm going to get here before you, so I'm going to go through and you're going to stop. You know, in other words, they're looking way ahead and thinking faster than we can. So I think in our, I'm told, you know, in our lifetime, and I was a kid born in the 60s and the 70s, so I think it's going to happen soon, but I think there are going to be huge legal hoops to jump through before we see the light of day of these.
Well, it's pretty exciting, and we've got to wrap up. Larry, I know this is one of your favorite segments. I'm going to give the last question to you this morning.
Well, I just wanted to know in all the millions of miles of testing you've done, if there's one brand or one model that you would say, run from this car.
Well, yes, in fact, there are. The April issue of Consumer Reports, we have what's called the brand report cards, where we look at the manufacturers as a whole and how their products stand up in reliability. And sad to say, if you are a huge fan of the Italian automaker Fiat, I would say run from Fiat. Not only are those cars not done well in Consumer Reports testing, but they're absolutely the bottom of the barrel in terms of reliability.
Well,
too bad, because I had high hopes for when they came back to the country.
And I don't want to leave the note on the segment on a negative note, so I'm going to ask you, the cover of Consumer Reports April magazine has the 2016 Mazda Miata, and that's also a car that you say is worth waiting for. It's a convertible. Tell us about that car, because boy, it's sexy. It's on the cover, and it's a beautiful, beautiful car.
I've loved every generation of the Mazda Miata. I believe they debuted in 1989 or 1990. I've driven every generation of Miata, and it is always in my top 10 cars of ones that I've loved or would seriously consider owning. So when Mazda comes out with a production version of the new Miata, Consumer Reports is going to be all over it. We love this car. We love that it still offers a manual transmission, an easy-to-fold top, lightweight, fuel-efficient, reliable. How can you go wrong, especially on a bright side? I'm in Phoenix, Arizona right now, and I'm looking at the sun. Thank goodness I'm out of Connecticut, but I wish I had a new Miata waiting for me outside of my hotel room right now.
Now, that's a note to end the show on. Our guest this morning has been Mike Quincy with Consumer Reports. Mike, we always enjoy talking with you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, great segment. We're heading to a high of 65 today, mostly sunny skies. Slight chance of thunderstorms tomorrow. We're not even saying slight chance of snow anymore. It's we're down to, if we get precipitation, it'll be rain, because tomorrow also a high of 65, 59 on Wednesday. We are in the depths of spring skiing already.
Trees are budding, yeah, and we were talking in the green room ahead of time. We've still got a solid base at the resorts, but we're going to have to be careful that we can make it all the way through the season.
I have faith it'll
happen. All right. On that note, we will be back. Stay tuned. Mound Money, KPCW.
KPCW presents Terrence Simeon and the Zydeco Experience live on the Egyptian stage February 6th, 7th, and 8th.
I don't eat breakfast in bed. I don't.
These two-time Grammy winners are the keepers of the culture of Southern Louisiana. Tickets at parkcityshows.com. The Egyptian is a nonprofit organization and proud supporter of KPCW.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to Mound Money. Boy, that's going to be a tough segment to beat, but I think we can do it. We're going to transition from talking about cars to talking about high-speed, high-skill ski and snowboard events. In studio with us now are Callum Clark and Mike Jaquit, both with USSA. 2 weeks ago, we had a huge event here in Park City. It was a big success. It was televised on NBC. Big, big ratings, bigger than the event the year prior leading up to Sochi. So tell our audience, what was the event, and paint kind of a visual picture as to what that event is.
Sure. I have to classify it as the Mazda Miata of snowboarding
there
events.
There you go. Good transition.
We had a great event that we wrapped up here. As you mentioned, the TV ratings were higher than the Sochi preview, but also higher than the Dew Tour. So we were really excited about that. And the biggest piece of it was probably our international ratings. We got really good pickup in Asia as well as Central Europe for the television. So it was. We were very happy with the results. And Callum can kind of break down what happened on the hill.
Yeah, it's this is our traditional Grand Prix. We run a series throughout the season, three stops. The Spring Grand Prix is the snowboarding event, and the Visa Grand Prix is our free skiing event. This is the pipeline to the Olympics in the Olympic years. This is the way the U.S. selects their team. This year we ran skiing and snowboarding slopestyle, which everyone saw at the Olympics with our great local kids, Sage Kutzenberg and Josh Christensen, winning gold medals. We came back here to compete in those sports.
In fact, Josh qualified for the Olympics at this event last year.
That's right.
He wasn't on the team.
He was in the mix, but he was not going to make it, and he needed to win in order to make the team, and he won in his local hill. and turned around and had an amazing performance in Sochi, as I'm sure we remember. And we also had ski and snowboard halfpipe on the weekends, on Saturday and Sunday.
So in both those, and I call them kids, I mean, they're young adults, both those young adults, Sage and Josh, they were kind of underdogs going into the Olympics, weren't they? And is that a common theme that maybe it takes a little bit of the pressure off if you're an underdog and you can give it 110% as opposed to maybe being conservative and trying not to make a mistake?
And both our kids said that. I call them kids too. Sage and Joss both said that, really going into Sochi, there were no expectations except for themselves. They just wanted to throw the best run that they could. And that worked out. And that, you know, I think a lot of athletes will say that when the pressure, when nobody's expecting anything, that's when they do their best. And certainly it was true for those two kids.
But the story here, over and above the athleticism and who won, is just how this event was put together and how it benefits U.S. skiing, USSA. And it's kind of confusing for casual observers. You have World Cups, and then you have Grand Prix, and then you have Dew Tours, and all sorts of things that all have the same athletes pretty much moving from one circuit to another, and some are qualify you for points in World Cup, and some don't, etc., etc. And I think the perception out there is that the big gonzo event for free skiers, for slope style, for all of that are the X Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to guess the World Cups. To me, the World Cups are kind of the pipeline, but I don't know.
Except that the hype goes to the X Games.
Correct.
They're rock and roll and all of that. And so that's kind of your competition.
Yeah.
So what have you demonstrated with Grand Prix in terms of attracting a TV audience? They're the competition, and you had to blow their socks off, and you did.
Well, I think for what we want to do is we're an athletic organization first. But what we do with these events is we create athletic opportunities that also promote the sport and promote our athletes. And being a World Cup means that we're going to have more of an international flavor to our event versus a U.S.-based flavor. So with that, we're able to tap into a bunch of international television markets. And our sanctioning body, FIS, does a great job of also leveraging, and our distributors do a great job of leveraging the Alpine World Cup, the Cross Country World Cup, to really raise the exposure and the distribution level of our events internationally. So, yeah, that was a story for us. Compared to the other events in the States, why we did such a better job of international TV ratings is we had an international field, but we also, being a World Cup, allows us to kind of open up some other markets
gives exposure to the athletes.
Sure.
And it's a competitive athletic event, a chance for them to compete and hopefully to shine. And you guys are also an independent organization. When I say you guys, I mean USSA. You receive, to my knowledge, no government funding. So is this also a source of revenue for USSA? Is there, when NBC televises it, I assume that they're paying some money for the rights to do that. Does USSA benefit financially from that, and is that an important part of your budget?
Yeah, there's two kind of pieces of the budget, and one is sponsors and TV. So our title sponsor Sprint and our title sponsor Visa contribute greatly to the event, and are actually, the Grand Prix is sold out of sponsorships for the past 2 years and the next 2 years. So we've been doing really well on the sponsorship front. And yeah, NBC does pay a licensing fee for the rights, but we also do a really good job locally too, and regionally with supporting the event as well.
Yeah, this is the story of Grand Prix. This is a very community and partnership orientated event. Something like the X Games are very professionally run, and they come in with a lot of resources. We leverage very heavily on the value of Park City. Park City has the best park in the world, known very well. That half pipe, it continues from the Olympic legacy to produce amazing athletic performances. And for one, we go and partner with great resorts like Park City. The second part is the community. We We have the Park City Chamber, the Utah Sports Commission also contribute financially to this. They see the value in the in both the international exposure that also brings an economic impact into town, different clientele. So we try to make this a business model that is sustainable. Grand Prix has been around as the longest standing tour in skiing and snowboarding in the world. And the reason why we've done that is to make it sustainable and fair for both the community and the resorts. So they want us back year after year.
You know, that's one of the things that, that I appreciated. We got together in the green room ahead of time, and I think of the Grand Prix, I think of World Cups as strictly an athletic event, and you forget about the broader context, right? Sure. Not only is it great for the athletes, it's also good for the organization behind it, USSA. And in this case, it's also a compliment to the town that of the three main Grand Prix events, the other is this year we're in Mammoth and in Copper Mountain. Mm-hmm. Park City just blew away the other venues, and that's a compliment to the town and how we get behind our athletes.
And I think that sustainability piece also goes across with the audience and with the local communities coming out to support it. It's such a two-way street with this community and this event in particular, but also all of our legacy events over at Deer Valley as well, and everything that's going on at the UOP. This is an Olympic town, and we're certainly, as an Olympic organization, we're certainly benefit from that.
And we don't have the benefit you do of perspective and going around to all these other places and in Europe. What is the kind of the perception of Park City as a ski and snowboard as a winter sports town outside of the U.S.?
I think one of the benefits is we keep bringing them back every year. So they just keep seeing everything that's happened since 2002, which has been quite a lot in town. So everybody loves coming here, all the international competitors, which is great. And you know, people know the brand because of that, of the Olympics, but also because we continue to have an event, two events here every year, Deer Valley World Cup as well as Grand Prix.
So I guess, you know, if I were to jump on a lift in Zermatt, Switzerland, or Wengen, or RA Sweden or somewhere, and I just said, I'm from Park City, would I have to continue and say that's in Utah in the western U.S., or is just saying I'm from Park City good enough in world ski country?
Absolutely, it's good enough. The power of the Olympics to change the face of the international profile of Park City is one thing. The maintenance of this legacy, I'm sure that in the radio reports when we talk about the legacy of this town, the fact that this continues to be an innovative town that's pushing the boundaries of development both in sport and also as in destination leisure, I travel a lot, and the ability to say I live in Park City, Utah, in fact, in ski towns in the world, it probably even more recognized than some parts of America. People know this town, and they know it for its exceptional weather, exceptional snow, and great, you know, like the great destination.
Well, and it's events like the Grand Prix. It's events like the World Cup. So the Olympics were, what now, 13 years ago,
yeah.
That keep a town like Park City on the forefront of skiers' minds. And it's also a commitment from the local resorts. If I'm not mistaken, and I was talking with somebody that probably knew, like the World Cup event at Deer Valley, Deer Valley doesn't get paid to host that. In fact, Deer Valley has to pay to host it, and it's a promotional value for PCMR, for Deer Valley. But it's also kind of a gift to the sport, and it's a gift to the community that the local resort gives to the town to keep us front and center.
This is why we're so humbled to have such great partners. This is an expensive deal to operate. We try to offset some of their costs, but at the end of the day, the resort is committing enormous amounts of resources to make these events happen and prioritizing their organization to help us out. And that's, I believe, the Olympic legacy, the value that we bring, and also the notoriety, international notoriety. But it comes from the culture of this town for sure, in wanting to deliver the best and put on the best face of the world.
And what's that conversation worth on the chairlift, where, you know, you can, Park City is known around the world. So when somebody's thinking about making their reservation to come to America, it's on the short list, if not at the top of the list. What's that worth? So, and those pictures going around the world of what, like we had 2 weeks ago, where we had it was snowing one day, it was beautiful the next. I mean, those say a lot about where you want to go on your ski vacation.
You know, and what happened in this last Grand Prix with the rating success you had, it kind of throws the old USSA model upside down, where I remember days when you would have a snowboard event at PCMR and you would have to pay NBC to run the event. You would actually buy an hour of TV time on NBC network in order to put on an event to expose it to the country, and you've turned that on its head now.
Yeah, we have. It's a huge this is the first year of our 5-year television deal with NBC that we just completed the first season of, and we're out of the Time by Business forever, which is great. It's a huge benefit to the organization financially, but it also allows us to invest some more money in our events, which we've done. We've invested some more money in television production in particular, and going live, which is important in America. So that was a huge benefit to us. It took us, 18 years of sweating them out to get that deal. For the next many years, including the 2019 World Championships, which is when this deal runs through with NBC, we have a exceptional platform for all of our events, all the ones in Park City included.
I'm glad to hear you say it's a 5-year deal, right? Because I think when you're...
It would have been a 4-year unless we had the 19 Park City World Championships here.
Perfect. And that's where I'm going, right? The benefit of being in the Olympic cycle and being the organization that you are is you get a lot of support in Olympic years, obviously, and probably the year leading up to it. But the challenge is, how do you get a sustainable source of funding for the organization in the non-Olympic year? So I'm glad to see you've got things like this. Let's talk a little bit about the business model for USSA, because we live here in Park City. We're all familiar with the USSA Center of Excellence here in Park City. Do you guys have boot camps in other places, smaller centers of excellence for somebody that's on the East Coast or out in California that maybe can't get out here? Or is this it? If an athlete wants to participate, they have to come to Utah?
No, we are a national, international organization. We have training centers that are scattered throughout the country and also the world. Our biggest training center that we've invested into recently is our early season speed training center in Copper Mountain, Colorado. This is basically a downhill training venue that opens November 1 each year. It was a significant investment on our part. We're working with partners in the East Coast of the U.S., as well as we have partnerships with places like Solden, Austria. And Solden are good friends of the USSA, and they provide training opportunities for our Alpine program as well as our snowboard cross program.
Well, Larry's giving me the signal we have to wrap up. This has been an interesting conversation. I want to give you a chance. So we're talking about your business model, the importance of funding. A friend of mine is involved in USSA, Brad Dixon, and he's always in a kind and in good way mentioning how myself and my friends can support USSA. Share with our audience, if somebody's a big fan of USSA, they want to get involved, they want to support, what can they do to help out?
Sure, and I appreciate that. We are not government funded, so we rely on our corporate partners. So if you own a business, you want to be a sponsor, call me. More locally, we rely on private giving. And there's two programs actually locally that are great. I mean, obviously, we have the corporate executive wellness, which is a program they can do at the Center of Excellence. You can train as an Olympian if you want to come in and do that.
I've also heard if you've hurt your ACL, there's no better place to recover from it
none
than
in the
signing
world.
Up for this. Yeah,
none in the world. And then you can always give to the organization. During our events, we also run our merchandise trailer, which is a great way to give the organization as well.
And then you can buy this pass that's good anywhere in the world, right?
Thank you. So the gold pass. Is a program that's good for free skiing. It's completely transferable. You can ship it to your friends and your colleagues and your clients and in other parts of the country so they can have free skiing as well. And that is a $10,000 program that goes right to our bottom line, which is a huge, huge benefit to our program.
Well, we thank Callum Clark and Mike Jaquit for coming in this morning. USSA is a great organization. We're glad to have you headquartered here in Park City. You do great things, not just here in Utah, but nationwide. And thanks very much for all you do.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And stay tuned to Mountain Money on KPCW. Up next, we will be talking about Joffles. And if you don't know what Joffles are, hang in there. We're going to explain it to you in a minute.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Hideout Canyon, Master Plan Community on the Lake, info at hideoutcanyon.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to Mountain Money and KPCW. We're going to transition from skiing now to, and I'm going to let our guest pronounce the name. It's a new food product, but not quite. So tell us how I should be pronouncing your company's name, and tell us what the offering is, what the type of food is that you offer.
Well, our new concept, it's actually an old concept. It's called Jaffles. It's based off the retro sandwich from South Africa that I grew up on, and it's now new in Park City. We opened a couple weeks ago and had our grand opening here, right here in Park City.
And our guests are, that's Meryl Vander Merwe of Jaffles, and she's joined by her other half. I can't say better half, just other half, Greg Cropper. Greg Cropper. And the two of you are embarking on this new food concept, and not just in Park City, but everywhere. But first, Meryl is, you probably know, is Dumond Gourmet Catering, which is you can drop by and take home gourmet food, and you can pass it off, I guess, if you want, as your own. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, that started as a sort of a private chef business when I dragged Meryl here from Micronesia when I was living down there by way of South France. I was on walkabout for about nearly 10 years, and we came across each other's paths. And I had been here in Park City forever, since the late 70s, and brought her here and started up this private chef service business, because that was the business she had been in globally. That led to amazing client lists with people like Larry Page and Facebook, and well, Kevin Plank of Under Armour, which is sort of behind this venture. And cooking for the Plank family for 7 years, you really got to know them. Mm-hmm. And they got to know you, and sort of 7 year interview process. Huh?
Yeah, that's right. And so I started Dumond Gourmet 8 years ago, even though my background is over 20 years of cooking. And we were looking for a commercial kitchen, which I opened up about a year and a half ago. And during that time, Kevin, I continued to cook for Kevin Plank and the family here in Park City. For about 7 years now, and he's always been interested in what I've been doing, and he's been watching me grow my business, and then this summer I had,
but it just wasn't scalable,
right?
Private,
sure,
business,
yeah,
right.
Not scalable, yeah. Individual,
yeah. And he was curious about this new sandwich that I brought back from South Africa, which is really it's really a cool story, because I'd gone back to South Africa last spring and was reminded of an old favorite that I'd had as a child, and it was actually the Jaffle. So the Jaffle really is two pieces of bread that you cook. We used to take a camping and cook it over a fire inside these Jaffle eyes.
Well, that's where I know these things from, and I think people in the audience, when Larry tried to explain it to me, I had a hard time getting a visual.
Uh-huh.
And I saw your menu, and it's like, oh, I know these things. Right. I used them when I was camping.
That's
so it's
right.
These campfire irons.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You put your bread in there, then you're filling. We used to make pizzas and then apple
right.
pie desserts.
Yeah, yeah.
You put your bread and then your pizza sauce.
Yeah.
I don't know if you do pizza.
Yeah, and it's
or not.
Regular bread. People think, oh, it's so crispy. What pastry do you use? And it's really not. It's really... Back in the day, we used to use regular white sliced bread.
Yeah, Wonder Bread.
Exactly. And we offer...
basic white bread is right. actually the most effective.
Yeah, and
so
we
you
offer,
squeeze the iron together with two pieces of bread. So you like make a sandwich. And
that's
then you
right.
squeeze you, it, and then that... And so then you cut the crust off,
right.
so you end up with a perfectly round
pocket sandwich.
Around the edge.
Yeah, this
very
crispy
convenient.
Toasted pocket sandwich. Yeah. So what we've done is we've taken this old concept, but we've put a new twist on it by filling them with globally inspired fillings. So
because again, she'd been cooking all over the planet. She learned Thai food in Thailand. She learned Chinese food in Singapore. This kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Mm-hmm. And we also have, so if you take a look at the menu there, Larry, we've got a section called Cravings, which is our globally inspired meal. The lamb curry is, it's called a babuti. That's actually our signature jaffle on the savory side. The Hanoi is really super popular at the moment with people coming in for lunch. We also have a section, which is the big kids section, which is more globally, not globally, it's more classically prepared dishes like a meatball sub or...
you can even stick mac and cheese in.
Mac and cheese is in there, exactly. Sure. And we do sweet and savory as well as breakfast all day. And the breakfast ones are killer. We have a chili quiles, which is a spin on a Mexican-inspired breakfast. And so everything's, all the breakfast ones have a base of scrambled egg inside, and then you can, you know, put
and
different toppings in.
One of the things when I was camping that I liked about it, it was some of my favorite memories as a kid, right? It was mm-hmm. kind of like a community-type event. Everybody's kind mm-hmm. of making, everybody can cook at the same time, put their different irons mm-hmm. in, make it. So there was this community-building type feeling. Are the chefs doing this behind the scenes, so somebody just orders and then it comes out and it's made, or can mm-hmm. are patrons participating in making these?
Well, it's a really simple concept when you come into Jaffel's. You really have to just pick your bread, choose your bread, choose your filling, choose your combo. So bread options are really white wheat, gluten-free, and cinnamon swirl for our dessert.
I was going to ask you about gluten-free. The
yes,
word bread
we
kind of has a
do.
Bad name right
yeah,
now,
no,
course.
We have a great gluten-free product. It's actually it's Load Makely out of Great Grains in Heber, and we use a buttermilk one, which is super moist compared to some of the other products on the market. And we've actually got a big vegan and gluten-free following. Which is rapidly
right.
growing
what
in Bay and Park City.
What about folks that are health conscious? What's like, you go in there for lunch, if you just had one of these sandwiches and a large glass of diet soda or ice water, what's the calorie count on one of some of these?
Our calories are all on our website at jaffels.com. We are super proud of our ingredients because we will be going...
That's with a Z on the end, by the way.
Yeah, we're going to be doing wholesale as well. We're busy, had Whole Foods come to our grand opening, so they've been knocking, and we're going to start those talks soon. So we're really conscious of all the ingredients that we put in there. We're proud of them. We want people to know exactly what we put in there. So they actually range from 180 calories to about 450 calories, depending on what the filling
all
is.
All high quality,
all
no preservatives.
Premium, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, no junk, nothing.
And Doug, you can't go in and order a Coke because they don't serve...
I did say ice
that's
water.
Right.
All
we
right.
don't
yeah.
do soda.
Good.
Right.
I'm not a soda fan.
Drinks.
I was
you,
just going to say
don't
ice water.
Serve,
but.
You don't serve sodas.
Yep, right. We like you too much, is
now,
what it
now
says
we,
on
we will have I custom soda water, flavored soda waters with a house-made ginger base and these kinds of things. But back to your question, the customers don't build these things, but we've intentionally designed this place so that you see the whole bit going
correct,
on.
Correct, yeah.
You see
that's part
them
of
using
the
irons.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the fun.
Yeah, yeah, so you see them assemble it, cut the crust
this,
off, and put it on the grill.
You have this retro sandwich that's sort of evolved because of her global experience in cooking. And it's sort of when Kevin Plank and his family came out and tried these things, they flipped out. They just loved them. So a few weeks later, we had our own little shark tank with Kevin. Kevin and his wife DJ came out, and it's the entire the Plank family.
And Shark Tank, for people that don't know, is a TV show where you pitch your idea to raise money from these wealthy families,
right.
venture capitalists.
And the guy, you know, if you watch CNBC or any of this, you see Kevin Plank every couple of weeks. You know, Under Armour is just killing it. It's going crazy.
They are, yeah. And he started very humbly as well,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, selling roses.
Many years.
Before that with a rose delivery service on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
So, you know, he came up and he said, you guys have time to come up and see us and talk about Jaffel's. And we're like,
of course.
Yeah.
So we sit down and we have this conversation. And he's like, okay, what do you see in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years? What do you want to do with this? How do you make that happen? And then he sits back and he closes his eyes and you're feeding him all this information. All of a sudden the eyes come open. He's like, the conversation changes now. And he's like, what do we need to do to make this happen? What do
we
need to do?
I'm curious because the idea of selling wholesale is kind of out of the natural trajectory of somebody thinking of doing a restaurant rollout. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it scales better than a restaurant. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scaling restaurants is hard. It's real estate intensive. Mm-hmm. It's labor intensive. It's operationally intensive. Mm-hmm. having flagship stores of Joffel's to build the brand and scaling this out to the grocery stores, that scales nicely.
Yeah.
Was that your initial vision, or was that in coming out of this conversation?
Yeah, certainly that was part of it. I mean, immediately Kevin was talking about, hey, you know, I'm going to get you on Home Shopping Network. We're going to sell these to everybody across the country.
Who's that? Lori, who's on Shark Tank?
But also there was the vision of student union buildings,
simple high traffic
things,
areas.
Not big brick and mortar stores, but little bases like in the student union building, in an airport, in a train station.
Now, let me ask you this question, which often comes up, right? So it's a good idea. I haven't had your product yet, but I've had those products. I just love them. I can see myself taking my kids there. Plus, they're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt bad, you know, when my kids were younger and we'd make them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew I was giving my kids not a healthy meal as a treat, but now I can have that yummy taste and it be healthy.
Yeah.
So as you guys think about rolling this out and the financial commitments and all that's involved there, one of the things that investors look for is what they call IP protection, right? Some kind of what protects your idea from other people stealing it? And how do you answer that? Because that's a tough one with
Greg's all legal. He is legal.
Well, I've got one leg in this project, and I'm a lawyer. I opened developed the Park City branch of Jones Waldo,
sure.
Utah's oldest firm, kind of thing. So
you
sailed
across the world too, didn't you? You're a sailor too.
Not sailing, but I was on the water a lot of the time.
Okay, you took a year off or something like that.
Nearly 10 years.
Ten years. All right.
Yeah. When he takes a vacation,
that's there you when go. We met. That's a different story. But as you think about protecting the idea,
it started with 1 year and it morphed into almost 10. But no, so we have IP counsel out in Baltimore. A lot of the sort of home stuff, Under Armour's based in Baltimore.
Sure.
And Kevin is huge about do as much for Baltimore as he possibly can. He's in the process of rebuilding the entire inner city, pretty much with one checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Baltimore's had a lot of success in the last 10 years.
Right.
So there's
he's got a lot to do with that
too. Made a big difference.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have counsel out there, and we've protected the
logo, the irons.
Our logo, our name. In fact, we just got great news the other day, because initially we got sort of a problem with the clerk and at the trademark office, and then they had to refer it to a lawyer, but they hadn't hired that lawyer yet, and then they hired the lawyer, and we just got great
things
news
get complicated very quickly, don't they?
Yeah, but it is all protected, and the whole concept with Kevin was having a product that was scalable, and so Joffel's is scalable, but when we said we wanted to do high volume, he also knew that, you know, the wholesale of it was huge, but it was also important for us to be able to do direct to consumer. So we're starting right now. We have our headquarters built. We're open. We've been operating for about 4 weeks now. We have a great lunchtime rush, and we have acquired a building on Main Street. We're going to be also doing Joffel's Express, because the product freezes really well, which is the interesting part, which is what we're going to be doing with Whole Foods and the wholesale side of the industry, and you can actually buy frozen Joffel's now as well from us, just to have in your freezer, pull them out, thaw them, reheat them in the oven, and they crisp up beautifully.
You know, it's funny, because a lot of these things you don't know until you start getting into it and say, oh, hey, these freeze really well,
and all these
other things.
Yeah.
And where I was going with the protection is, you know, the reality is, in a lot of these businesses, there is very little. You protect what you can, but the bottom line is, if somebody wants to do a rip-off concept, they can.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about execution, though. The team that's going to win is the team that can execute and move the quickest, and surrounding yourself with great advisors like Kevin Plank and being committed to it and really giving 110% makes a huge difference.
Yeah, the speed at which you do it is important, because the concept is so simple. In fact, since we've started the project, we've noticed that there is another outfit in Australia that's doing it. So,
beat shack thing, but very cool. They call it Jaffel.
Yeah, but it's
putting spaghetti in there and stuff.
Having the backing, having the machine, having the Rolodex of Kevin Plank, and having that all behind us day to day, you know, making it move along very quickly. We have an aggressive program. We're going to be doing a national rollout in 18 months, and then globally, I want to take it back to South Africa in 3 years.
The full toolkit that he's offered us.
Yeah. And the express version, you'll start seeing multiple locations throughout the summer here in Park City through our coffee shops and the grocery stores and so forth.
I look forward to seeing that. It sounds like a great foundation. It's starting right here in Park City. We wish you all the best. Thanks for coming on this
morning. And if somebody wants to try out a Jaffel, where do they go?
Yeah, we're located in Silver Creek, just behind the old Bell's Sinclair gas station.
It's not that old. Don't call it old.
the junction of Highway 40 and 80. So it's between Kimball Junction and Home Depot. All of our details are on site at jaffels.com, J-A-F-F-L-Z or Z. And you can, also important, we're doing a free delivery right now. So if you guys want free delivery, minimum of 6 Jaffel orders, give us a call.
Very good. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Greg Cromper.
Thank you.
Greg Cromper and Merrill Vander Merwee with Jaffels. And we'll be back after this.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Dave Bullock.
And Kathy Barker.
From the Story Mine.
Listen to Storytelling at its finest every Sunday morning at 8:30.
Right here on KPCW.
Welcome back. Just a few seconds to wrap up Mountain Money. I want to thank our great sponsors, Mountain West Bank, the Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, San Francisco Design, and Jones Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. And I guess, Doug, for you, the takeaway from the show is you need a Mazda Miata and drive over to Jaffel.
That sure is a pretty car. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thanks for being with us on Mountain Money. That's it for now. This is KPCW Park City, and right now it's time for NPR.